If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast.
No, it's not!
Granica. Huh?
No, it's not!
What did I do wrong?
I'm just, I'm getting into the swing of things because we have to disagree on this episode.
Well, I think one thing that we can agree on, hopefully, is the name of our own show.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm Ben Harrison.
No, you're not. So this is a very special episode.
Yeah.
The Greatest Generation. We landed on the Measure of a Man square. And the rules of the Measure of a Man square are that we flip a coin before we do the pod. And then whatever side of the coin we land on, we take separate sides of the argument. Is this a good episode? And so we argue that side throughout the review.
Right. Yeah, and this is based on the time that Commander Riker had to argue vehemently against Data's autonomy as a citizen of the Federation, right?
Pinocchio is broken. Its strings have been cut.
I'm hoping that by the end of this episode, like Riker and Data, you and I will remain friends. and maybe have even engendered a greater respect for each other. I doubt it.
In taking on this role, we both injure ourselves.
in having any respect for you, Ben, I feel like it would be an improvement.
Bud!
Do the rules of this episode merit any further discussion, or do you think we can just decide what heads is and what tails is, flip the coin, and shove off?
Yeah, I feel bad that we don't have our new challenge coin yet, because on our 2018 Greatest Gen Con tour, we are going to be doing we have a new challenge coin in the works, and it actually has a face on one side.
Yeah.
I'll let people wonder about what face that might be. I have seen like a digital mock-up of this thing, and it is the greatest thing maybe
I've actually
ever
looked at this coin while wearing a VR headset. Like, I've been inside this coin.
Oh, yeah.
And it's spectacular inside and out, Ben.
I am more excited about the merch on this tour than I am about most things in life. Like the poster, the coin, some of the other things that we have schemed up, I am really, really excited about.
I think it would be so much easier if we did the tour and didn't even do a show for it. Just like went to a place, opened up a couple of suitcases and sold merch.
Yeah, just hang out with everybody, sell the merch, don't entertain them.
No need for a lengthy audio and video check before the show starts. Also known as the scariest 2 hours of my life in any given day.
Yeah, we have such a simple show. It's just you and me sitting at a table, drinking a beer and talking about Star Trek. And yet, the sound check is always like really a 10 out of 10 on the stressometer.
It's why I'm excited to be bringing out Robs.
Yeah.
On tour. He's going to make everything better, right?
That's the idea.
soundproof headphones on me and like a blindfold and then stick me backstage so I will experience none of that pre-show stress.
Fuck that. You and I are going to be out eating chicken wings while Rob does the whole thing.
Pre-show chicken wings, really the best part of touring.
Yeah. We ran the risk when we did our show in Philly last year of doing pre-show oysters, which really could have backfired badly for the people of Philadelphia.
I love that. I think we were on show 8 of the 11 or something, and like I don't know what filled us with oyster confidence.
Yeah,
but we sure had it there.
We were brimming with the kind of confidence that we should never have. Given.
Especially because, like, for half the tour, the first half of the tour, I was so paranoid about my digestive system that I was basically eating only polenta and RX bars for, like, 6 days straight. And by the time we got to Philadelphia, I was like, sure, I'll slam a dozen oysters with you. Let's do it.
Yeah. And they were served in the Philadelphia style with a bunch of squeezed cheese on a hoagie, right?
Yeah, they threw them at us like so many batteries. So I'm fingering my Dustbuster Club coin, still available on the Max Fun store, by the way.
Yeah, if you're a completionist or you just want last year's model, it can be had. And as with all challenge coins that we sell, we are donating a portion of sales to charity, the National Center for Science Education.
I'm going to say heads is the crossed phaser side, and that will indicate the I like this episode position, and I will defend that argument.
Well, wait. How does this work then? So heads pick is pro, tails is con. You're going to flip it once, and it determines which side I'm on?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't believe there's any right or wrong side of this argument to be on. I think it'll either way.
Do you have a side that you would like to be on? Are you willing to reveal what your true feelings are here ahead of the game, or what you think would be the most fun to?
You know what?
To get?
I think that would be a fun thing to disclose right now. I liked the episode. Did you?
I did too, but I think that I would have more fun being con.
Okay. All right. I am now going to flip the coin to tell you what side you will be arguing.
Okay, so it's heads, pro, tails, con?
Yes. I didn't say what tails was. Tails is the backside of this coin. It just says the greatest generation.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to flip. And I'm doing that thing where my hand is over my other hand. I'm about to reveal what side is up. And tails is the side that's up, Ben.
So, oh, man. So I got what I want, which is not really the point of the game, but...
you'll be arguing to the negative on this episode.
Well, I also just want to, like, set some expectations here. I watched this episode a few days ago at my parents' house, and I wrote notes, which I think I left at my parents' house. So I'm going to be doing this from memory and also from having just reread the description on Memory Alpha.
I think maybe one of the deepest forms of shame would be to, as what are you, like a mid-30s person?
Yeah.
To call your mom and ask her to, I don't know, like take an iPhone picture of your notes about a Star Trek episode for your Star Trek podcast.
Well, this is the thing.
Send those to you.
Like, I definitely, in packing up at my parents' house, I was visiting for my dad's 75th birthday, and I was packing up my stuff, and I said, oh, I definitely have to pack those notes because, like, B, I need them, but A, I definitely don't want my parents to find this piece of paper and read it.
I am and was surprised to know that you are still pen and papering your notes for the show. I switched to the Notes app after, I think, the 6th season of TNG.
I
still have my Moleskinas full of show notes, but I switched to electronic so that I would never leave them anywhere, and they were in the cloud.
Yeah, I don't feel like I remember things as well if I type them down as when I write them down. Hmm. I don't know why that is. I always, like, I tried to do
laptop note-taking in college briefly, and it didn't go well for me.
Well, Ben, I think one thing is for sure, and that is there is no right or wrong way to do this show. There is only the wrong way. And so in saying that, I will pivot over to Show Actual, in which we talk about and argue about Season 2, Episode 11 of Deep Space Nine, Rivals.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
And its introduction of an Elarian, which is the Guinan race, the race of listeners, the Sting race from Star Trek Generations.
Yeah.
Ben. He's played by Chris Sarandon. You know who Chris Sarandon is, don't you?
I was trying to think if he's been in another Star Trek thing.
Humperdinck from Princess Bride.
You promised me that you would never say that name.
Is really the brightest star in my memory of him as an actor.
Is he related to Susan Sarandon, noted Bernie bro?
It is here that he met his first wife.
So she kept his last name?
They married in 67 and divorced in 79.
Damn.
Yeah. He's 75 right now. I keep forgetting the show that we're reviewing is very, very old, Ben.
This introduces a problem in this episode. A problem that will persist throughout this episode, which is that this guy is a listener.
I offer a sympathetic ear.
And the main other Elorian we know is Guinan, also a listener, and also a bartender. The bartender on this show has giant ears, and yet never a mention is made of the Ferengis being potentially also good at listening.
I think we have a long, long runway of building Ferengi alien character development on DS9. I think it could be that is the truth. We just don't know that at this point in time, Ben.
I'm just saying, like there's at least a quip to be had, and you have to consider that a failure in the script, that they didn't work anything like that in.
I just think it's cool that we see another Elorian, and I had read in the production notes that Guinan herself was actually supposed to appear in this episode.
No shit.
But was unavailable. Could you imagine?
Damn.
I think one of the great regrets, and I don't think that this should be construed as a negative feeling about this episode, but more of an overarching thing about Star Trek in general, is that there was not enough Whoopi Goldberg / Guinan throughout.
Well, Whoopi, you know, Star Trek is only so big, and Whoopi is much bigger, and they were really at her mercy, so...
This guy, Mardis Mazur, he has Hair Magazine hair.
He really does. He's a total haircut.
Like when you go get your haircut at a certain type of place, there is the magazine full of haircuts.
Yeah.
Like, you could only ever find this magazine at a barbershop. They don't sell these at a grocery store or a magazine stand. Like, it's a specialty magazine, and this guy's in it.
This guy's in it. He's also a pencil on paper drawing in the window of the barbershop.
Yeah. He is a little bit like when you go by a dry cleaner or a tailor or something, that Take On Me sticker that they put on.
Right.
He is that guy for sure.
He's that guy, and he's talking to this lady. She's really spilling her guts about her retirement plan. And how, you know, she's got a line on some asteroids that are just loaded with valuable minerals, and that she's going to put all of her retirement money into buying up a mining concession. You know, widow talk.
it's what WIDs talk about when they gather.
Yeah.
WID being what they call each other for short.
Yeah. What's up, WID? That's what they say. At the meetings.
This has all the feeling of like a cold call that an elderly relative gets from a stranger. Like all Mardis Mazur is doing is there listening to this lady spill her guts.
But I feel like I can really trust you. It's like I've known you forever.
I feel like I could buy a reverse mortgage from you anytime.
Yeah. Odo has been creeping. He's creeping in the background, and he notices this conversation happen, and he... straight up goes up to Martis Mazur and like grabs him and takes him to the brig.
Yeah, it is hand on shoulder, like, quiet, ma'am. This man does not have your best interest at heart.
Odo has fingered him as a swindler. They have a history.
Right, and so Mazur gets kind of perp walked. It must be so embarrassing to get arrested on Deep Space Nine because you just have to walk through the station with Odo with his hand on your shoulder.
It would be great if Odo turned himself into a squad car and like, and an arm came out of that car and then put him inside of himself.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Odo can get very small, and so presumably he can get very big. Could Odo get to be the size of a car with Odo driving it?
We don't know that now, and I really hope that we find out eventually. Someone wrote me on Twitter and said that I think Odo is hollow.
Whoa.
And that idea interested me greatly, and it sort of lends credence to the idea of him able to get much bigger and much smaller if the volume of his liquid is very thin.
Yeah.
And he's like an Easter bunny, like a chocolate Easter bunny.
Have we seen him in the bucket yet? Because I feel like that would be like what his actual volume is, right? Whatever water level he is. Is Odo like a liter? How many liters of Odo are there?
I want to know all this. So far, Deep Space Nine seems unwilling or unable to give us this level of detail about Odo.
Yeah.
But I think that's great.
See if, next time we do Bible study, we'll see if we can find anything about how many liters of Odo.
Right. We cut to, after the break, to what the A story of this episode is, which is the rivalry, the return to the rivalry between O'Brien and Bashir, this time, in the form of some rackets ball. But before we get to the rackets ball court, we get O'Brien excitedly preparing.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
And walking to this rackets ball court that he has made with his own bare hands.
Adam, this shit is so corny. Like, the shot of Miles Edward O'Brien walking down the hallway doing a bad job of little tennis serves to himself. Don't you just turn the episode off at this point, Adam?
I like O'Brien so much. I just like it when he's happy. Like, he's had very little to be happy about in 2.5 seasons. So knowing how pumped he is, and also I also like the depiction of a hobby. What are the hobbies that we've seen in Star Trek up until now? There's Geordi's model ship building. There's Data's mystery solving.
Riker fucking.
Yeah. When O'Brien finally gets to his homemade racquetball court, he finds inside Dr. Bashir.
Hello, Doctor.
Yeah, what a disappointment. Somebody else also wants to play this competitive sport, Miles.
Was O'Brien excited to go play with himself?
He's walking down the hallway, and the camera doesn't dwell on it, but you do see that there's a hand-painted sign that says O'Brien's Jack Shack.
The doors whoosh open, and it's like the Jack Shack from Billy Madison sounds coming out of it.
What was he going to do with that racket?
The same thing that you do with the bat from the Fuck Bokai program. O'Brien's sad to see Bashir, and he gets even sadder when Bashir lists off his myriad racquetball accomplishments to him.
Yeah, I thought it was weird that he rattled off half German, half Native American.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a combination.
Yeah, and this all serves to tell us, the viewer, that Bashir is very, very good, and O'Brien is just more of a tomato can in the boxing parlance.
Yeah, and they also have kind of different approaches to the game. Like, Bashir has like all kinds of kata that he does to get warmed up, but O'Brien is like, I enjoy playing. I've never taken a lesson in my life. He has the same amount of skill that Ferris Bueller has on the clarinet.
It's Maori battle dance-like, and only it does not intimidate O'Brien at all, as much as it sort of annoys him further.
Right. And yeah, it turns out that Bashir is not all bluster. It's like he is fucking dominant. He's way better than O'Brien. So this is the other thing, is like one of the most well-known adages about tennis is you get better by playing against somebody that's better than you. But O'Brien just butthurt that he has to play against anybody at all. What?
O'Brien's the sort of tennis player that likes to play against the serving machine. It is very satisfying to just stand there and hammer back serves from the machine, I guess.
So while O'Brien is getting creamed...
We cut back to Mazur, and he's in his cell, and he's... He has a cellmate that is in desperate need of a CPAP machine.
Yeah. He's got the my father-in-law of cellmates. And, you know, in my father-in-law's case, the form this takes is he doesn't have any sense of how loud the television is. So if you sleep there, you know, even if you're down the hall with the window with the door closed, the television is just so insanely loud that you can't sleep. In this guy's case, it is the... It is the loud snoring, and it's the kind of snoring that is arrhythmic and does sound a little bit like an apnea situation.
Yeah, it's troubling, but it's more annoying than troubling to Mazur, who is forced to wake him up.
Pardon me, friend.
This guy has, for some reason, has been allowed to go into the jail cell with a device.
Yeah, which, a device of unknown origin.
A device of unknown purpose and origin.
Yeah.
Which, like, man, like, I got locked up on totally meaningless pretenses the time I got locked up. Like, it was, like, the case was thrown out. It was so meaningless. But it was... like, take the belt, take the shoelaces. Not just because of what I might do with it, but because of what somebody else might do with it, you know? Like,
yeah.
I sat around in that cell for 6 hours with no belt and no shoelaces.
Did they take your glasses?
No. Got to keep the glasses.
Oh, that's interesting. Why wouldn't they take your glasses?
I don't know. Very foolish, because those glasses concealed tiny knives.
Well, yeah, I mean, you take the arms off of those glasses. Those are stabbing tools.
Yeah, I think that it'd probably take enough time to work that into a shank that you're probably processed to central booking by the time you'd be ready for it and they'd have caught you.
Was that ever expunged, or is that on your record as a thing?
It is not on my record. And I know this because my wife briefly had a job where she could... where she was like routinely searching people's criminal records and stuff, and she worked up a file on me, and I came out squeaky clean. It was great.
This is when you first started dating. She wanted to do her due diligence.
Yeah, I was kind of curious to get my mugshot because I thought that would be a fun thing to have. But that has been expunged as well. Like, there's no mugshot
even.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
I should have. I think I had like a 6 month window to go get it, and I blew it. It was out in Queens. You don't just go to Queens for no reason.
No, you definitely need a specific reason for Queens.
Yeah. Golden Carton. The cut.
Golden Carton. So. This guy shares what is known in the gambling parlance as a bad beat story of his life. he starts talking about gambling with this thing, starts telling Mazur that his luck has been terrible for a long, long time. He can't seem to win at this game on the device that he's playing. And then he plays it one last time, wins, and then croaks.
I won.
That's nice.
What is the winning here? I mean, this seems like playing a slot machine game on your phone. It's like, who cares? There's no upside.
It felt to me very much like the game from The Game.
Yeah, it's a Star Trek game that we just have to take their word for it, that it's fun and diverting.
It seems like he got a little mini O when he won. So it looked like there was at least a little bit of like an endorphin hit.
Yeah.
When he won the thing.
I mean, Riker definitely came the first time he played The Game. What's it called? Suck Disc?
Yeah. I don't think it takes much to make Riker come, TBH.
Yeah, this episode starts on dubious pretenses and just keeps taking bad turns, you know?
But the thing is, like, this is not a departure from how Star Trek or Deep Space Nine has worked up until now. Like, this is not a show that explains how devices like this work.
But it
could
have been.
Trust you as a viewer to get its usefulness to the story. And
it
then
exploits my goodwill as a viewer by showing me a bullshit game that does not look fun.
Ben, you know what reads as very exploitative?
What's that, Adam?
Is the cut to shirtless O'Brien in the next scene, post-racquetball match. Just sweaty as hell, sweaty, angry O'Brien.
My dad could have wiped the cord with him.
A depiction of O'Brien that I wish existed in action figure form, because I would buy the shit out of that. I would make an O'Brien bubble out of the collectability of those figures.
I heard that Jaegers are selling at $50 on eBay. So the Jaeger bubble has dissipated somewhat, but it is not over.
No, not at all. It still exists, and I still have a stack of, I want to say,
most of the world's supply of Jaegers.
Most of the world's supply of Jaegers belong to me. Most of them purchased for less than $5.
Another weird choice in this episode: Keiko being nice and supportive to her husband, and also them not arguing in this scene? What? Since when?
This is a great Keiko episode. And that is not the coin talking. Like, I really think she's great in this ep. She is a loving, supporting partner to O'Brien.
It's nothing to be ashamed of.
Well, this is the coin talking, Adam. And I just want to say, you can't just change everything about a character dynamic without some work. This is lazy writing.
This is not the only scene we'll get between O'Brien and Keiko. I think there's a fair amount of development of their relationship throughout this ep, so we'll return to this a little later.
Yeah, it's like Frances High, you know? You watch an entire movie of this girl fucking around and being unsure of how to proceed with her life, and then just cut to the end, and she's like gotten her shit together, and it's like, wait a second. You just cut to her having her shit together? What about like the climax of the movie part? You went right from middle of the movie to denouement.
I just want to address the viewer right now. This is my camera. I just want to look the viewer right in the eye and say, like, this is the only Star Trek podcast that would draw an equivalence between an episode of Deep Space Nine and Frances Ha. You are such a fucking dork, Ben.
Not my favorite of Gerwig's work, but, you know, I think she's great.
It's a lesser Gerwig?
It's minor Gerwig, decidedly.
Back in Quark's bar, I guess.
Wait a second, though. I have another thing I want to complain about with Gerwig. In that, in Lady Bird.
You have the floor. You with your hand up?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have the floor.
Is this my camera? Lady Bird. Set in 2002, she's a senior in high school, which is when I was a senior in high school, and she gets into NYU off the wait list, a thing I did, and then it's attributed to because 9/11 made people not want to go to NYU. So it's like I've watched an entire movie that's touched me deeply on an emotional level about a young person in Northern California that wants to go live in New York and live the life of an artist despite the financial hardship it will put on her family. And then it just fucking kicks me in the nuts with, you probably didn't get in on merit. It was probably because they couldn't fill enough seats. Fuck you, Greta Gerwig.
I think everyone could have guessed you didn't make it into that school on merit.
Fuck then. You, Adam. What are you, on Gerwig's side?
Yeah, the coin says I'm pro-Gerwig.
Yeah, so this episode does this cutesy little thing where it intercuts between Keiko and Miles and Dax and Bashir. And, you know, O'Brien is telling Keiko about how he got creamed and he sucks and he hates how much better Bashir is. And Bashir is telling Dax, like, oh my God, O'Brien is such a prideful idiot. Like, he would not let this game drop despite the fact that I was crushing his shit.
I admired Bashir for his reticence to keep beating up on someone that he's trying to befriend. He, like, the way he puts it to Dax, he's like,
I just don't want to humiliate him.
I can't just throw the game.
Yeah.
And yet O'Brien won't leave me alone about it. So, like, what is he supposed to do? And what's worse is that, like, O'Brien is someone that Bashir wants to be friends with, and he wants to be friends with him so bad, and it's just a through line to his entire character. Like, he wants to love Dax, and he wants Dax to love him. He wants to be friends with O'Brien, and O'Brien can't stand him. Like, who is friends with Bashir at this point? He's sort of a lonely man, and I'm starting to feel sorry for him.
The issue with Bashir is that he doesn't know how to relate to people. You know, he throws his next game with O'Brien, which O'Brien is as insulted by as he should be.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about this scene. One of the weirdest things about this scene, which was very distracting for me, is that Bashir is eating like a Filet-O-Fish sandwich and keeps like looking for sauce to put on it. Like, yeah. None of the sauce at the Replimat is full.
Yeah.
That's such a weird bit of business. Like, we've never seen an identifiable kind of food on this show. It's always like, you know, a bunch of tentacles coming out of a flower pot or something. Like, he's just eating like a fried fish sandwich, right?
I really love the idea that in a perfect future, there's still such a thing as a beige plate. And that's what Bashir's eating. Like, I love it.
Remind me what a beige plate is.
It's a thing that we call the appetizer platter, which is frequently just all the fried appetizers that a restaurant offers all on one big plate.
Yeah.
And we ordered it one time from a bar near a music venue, and we had never seen anything more beige. Like, they didn't even do that thing where there's like a leaf of lettuce where the sauce cup rests on top of. Like, it was just beige on a white plate. It was striking.
Mm. Yeah, well, Bashir, the medical practitioner on the show, goes for the notoriously unhealthy beige plate.
He Lipitor hypo sprays himself right after.
Yeah. He also like did the thing of like getting out of a Tinder date by having a friend call and say it's an emergency and you have to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's an excuse that plays in the far future.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pale.
A fucking pale.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my little state.
Oh,
I don't use the bucket anymore.
There's a moment a couple of scenes ago where Mazur attempted to sell the gambling device to Quark, and Quark doesn't want it.
You're wrong again. He's still in the cell. He gets released at this point.
Are we also arguing about order of the show, Ben?
If you're up for it, I would love to, because I'm totally right now.
Please continue.
Turns out the people that have lodged the initial complaint against Mazur have declined to press charges, so he just gets sprung, which is weird, right? Like, he's arrested and charged, but then just released suddenly. Was he in jail for a week? Was it like a couple hours and then he's just out? The spans of time are totally impossible to wrap your head around.
I have the same questions, especially because there is the eventual construction of an entire casino that happens at some point during this ep.
Well, Adam, as Captain Philippa Louvois would have said in the episode Measure of a Man, you're required to defend your client. And if I get a sense that you're not defending your client with all of the tools available to you, I'll end this trial right now.
I'd like to see you try. Okay. You're complaining about how quickly Mazur was released from prison. Do you think other people had such complaints about how soon you were released after being brought in there? I know I do.
You know, the one person that didn't get released when we all got sprung, we were shooting a music video. The one person that did not get released was the rapper, because he had some warrants for unpaid parking tickets. So he had to go spend the night in central booking and then come back the next morning and finish his music video.
That's some cold shit right there.
Yeah, I was like, man, we're dealing with a hardened criminal, a guy who missed a payment on a parking ticket.
Hmm. we're pretty late in our podcast ep, so maybe we can move ahead to the part where Mazur has opened a casino.
Yeah. He does not sell the device to Quark. He uses the device as like a gambling collateral for him to gamble for a drink. But then he sweet talks this lady into opening a casino with him. And this place is popping. It's the hot new spot on the promenade.
If I'm this lady, this seems like a great investment because only an idiot could ever lose money on a casino. Like, you'd have to be a fucking dumbass.
Yeah, to have a casino go out of business, like,
yeah.
You'd have to be like a legendarily bad at business idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the house always wins. That's them's the rules.
The configuration of this casino is pretty funny to me. It's just a bunch of purple-headed R2-D2s like around a bar. And the rules of this game are the same as they ever were. You just touch the ball, and then it either glows and makes a fun sound, or it does not glow and makes a sad sound.
This seems to be a little more linked to currency, though, because
you're right.
Like, at some point, like, everybody wins all at once, and he's like, well, shit, we have to pay these people now.
Mazur has also gone through a costume change of his own. He's switched into full magician regalia.
Yeah, he's kind of in Vegas magician drag, isn't he?
There are references to currency in this room, Ben, that our viewers of Discovery might be familiar with, the Isik.
Yeah.
As a denomination.
I thought that was exciting to hear.
Yeah.
Is this the only other time Isik's come up?
I think this is the only time besides Disco that it ever came up. And I think that's when people think of the greater Star Trek universe. Like, I don't think this is anyone's favorite episode. That's not to say that it's a bad episode at all.
Well, we know it's one person's favorite episode, whoever wrote the second to last episode of Discovery.
Right. But like the idea that this piece of throwaway jargon could be taken and used somewhere else, I thought was pretty interesting. Good job by Disco, getting really in the weeds with the references.
Yeah.
I was really confused in this scene because Rowana, the investor in this casino, walks in and she looks so different from how she looked the first time.
Right. Did we build the casino and turn this woman into an old money fancy lady in... Like, how long did this transition take?
I think that's a natural thing that happens whenever someone achieves a little bit of wealth or success. The first thing you do is improve your wardrobe.
Right, but she's like, the way they style her is like she's been rich her entire life. Like, it's totally absurd.
Throughout this episode, Mazur...
Also, she gets jealous at him from motorboating one of the waitresses. Like, she should be firing him for sexually harassing her, A. But B, like, since when is their relationship romantic? It should just be business, right?
This Dabo girl that he's hired to work the room was actually in Star Trek before. She was one of the fantasy women that Q made appear on Riker's arm.
Really?
Remember that moment?
I don't need your fantasy women.
Yeah,
she came back, and she's just as hot.
She does not have a lot to offer, but what she does is objective beauty.
This is a bad time for Rowana to walk in, but Mazur plays it off like it's no big deal. Like he's counseling her on how to work the room.
Neatness counts. Never think it doesn't.
You know, she's still got the lease on the building, so it means she's got his nuts in a sling. Like, if
I mean, they are not at war at this point, but like in the civilization parlance, there's like a red frowny face next to her when she considers her feelings towards Mazur.
Yeah, and then I think it's around this point that the WID from early on in the app comes back, and she sort of 419 scams him. She's like, "Oh yeah, like we got the mining rights. We just need to commission a soils report on the asteroid. So I need 10,000 Isiks, and if you can hook that up, we'll be in business, and I'll pay you back 10x, whatever you give me." And he gets out a lunch pail full of money, gives it to her, and she's off in the least subtle act of foreshadowing of all time.
There's a story economy in this episode that I feel like is pretty bracing in terms of how fast it moves. Quark is upset that the casino is opening up. There's a strange amount of luck, both good and bad, presenting itself among members of the crew and occupants of Deep Space Nine, to the degree that it's being reported at ops. Like, there are more than the typical number of slips and falls that we normally get on DS9, for example.
Right, the liability attorneys of the station are really kicking into high gear.
We're seeing things like Dax fortuitously able to find a file, or O'Brien slipping on a ball during a match, or Kira accidentally breaking a computer. Like, bang, 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 these things are happening.
Another point where I was deeply dissatisfied with this episode is Kira has a pratfall, but they choose to let that happen off screen.
This is not me agreeing with you, Ben. This is me being positive, and my positivity will go in the direction of Nana Visitor. Has great physicality as an actor. They should have shown her do this. Like, you roll out the tumbling mat under her at ops, and you have her take a fall. I think you got to do that, right?
I'm glad you see it my way. I'm glad you're coming over to my side of the coin, Adam.
I'm not. That was pro Nana Visitor. That was not anti episode.
I'm pro Nana Visitor as well, but I am anti this episode. Till the day I die, Adam.
What are you doing?
For as much time as we spend in the racquetball court, we see very little racquetball. Did you notice this?
Yeah, because, you know, unlike Keanu Reeves training for a movie where he has to fight, they don't have 6 months to actually get good at racquetball.
We see more shirtless O'Brien than we do actual racquetball. And I was not expecting that ratio.
Yeah, because Quark has started to promote this racquetball showdown. The doctor versus the mechanic, the fight of the century, two sweaty dudes in a small room swinging rackets around. And somehow we're asked to believe that the citizens of Deep Space Nine are very excited by this promotion.
No one at DS9 wants to shell out the 60 strips of latinum for the pay-per-view. They want to go to the bar that's going to play it. So that makes a ton of sense to me.
Who is selling the pay-per-view, though? Because I would have assumed that would be Quark, since he's also the promoter.
I think this is...
That right off to some unshrewd businessman, and then...
This is on HBO 40 that they're going to show this on.
Yeah, two people who are bad at racquetball playing racquetball. Yeah, and so, the game is, super one-sided, but not on the side that you would have thought.
Yeah, O'Brien is really murdering Bashir here, and it gets to the point where people are going crazy at Quark's. It's kind of a bloodbath in a way no one's expecting, and O'Brien looks into the camera, much like I like to look into the camera when we record this show, and he says, we're going to take a little break.
Cutting the transmission.
What? You can't. Watch me.
Another complaint I have, Adam, about this episode is that Bashir is in a onesie, and we've seen lots of onesies on Star Trek, but somehow this onesie is, entirely free of nuck.
Where's the nuck?
Where is the nuck? What happened to the nuck? And if they can make a onesie that is free of nuck, why are they putting Jake Sisko in a super nuck forward onesie?
What is the costume department's dark secret?
What the hell are they doing? Is Alexander Siddig binding himself? Is he James Gumming in this?
Does the white go all the way down? Is it white over where the nuck would be?
It is silver where the nuck would be. The white stops at the nipples, and then there's a teal stripe, and then it is a super empire waist of silver pant all the way down.
I wonder if silver is the secret.
Oh, it tricks the eye?
Maybe it smooths your contours. Maybe he's wearing nuck Spanx.
Well,
is that a thing?
He's doing bad, and the way that the gang on Deep Space Nine discover that probability is out of whack is that O'Brien can throw the racquetball at any surface, and it'll bounce around infinitely and come right back to his hand.
Which is a great camera trick in that they just have him hit a ball off screen and then he holds up his hand and then someone obviously throws it into his hand.
If by great camera trick you mean super lazy camera trick, then I have to agree, Adam.
I loved it.
Hey, you know that scene in Alien 4 where Ripley like goes in and plays basketball with Ron Perlman and shit, and she like tosses the ball over her head and it just nothing but net as she walks out of the room?
That's a great fucking callback.
She really made that shot.
Ripley for three.
I watched a little thing on it and they showed like the unedited clips of that. And Perlman like flips out, and I think you can actually see it in the film that Perlman does not stay in character when she nails that, because they were like, we're probably gonna have to do this as an effect, but just throw the ball.
How many takes did it take?
It was a one-er.
The first time.
I believe that's what they said in the video. Yeah.
Wow, that is legendary.
Yeah, Sigourney Weaver, goat. So they bring Sisko and Dax down to the racquetball court to demonstrate how badly probability is fucked up, and Dax is like, well, all the neutrinos in here are spinning the same way, therefore probability is out of whack, and somehow this leads them to Mazur.
They totally go like Jesus and the Money Changers on this casino and just fucking go hog wild in there.
Yeah, they clean out the temple, and turns out that wishy-washy couple that accused him of a crime before has changed their mind again, and he is rearrested for the crime that he was arrested for at the beginning of the episode.
Right, and while he's in the brig, Alcia gets perp-walked into an adjoining brig cell because she has also been a grifter from the start.
Yeah, she tried the mining rights grift on Quark after she tried it on Mazur.
This Mazur guy has one last argument with Quark at the end, in which Quark comes to the brig to gloat about winning the contest of casinos, which is basically what has happened here. Quark, throughout the episode, was growing more and more impatient and apoplectic about the neighboring casino across the way, and now he's won.
The question of how Quark's business is doing has really been a hot topic in the show lately.
Yeah, it's true, and he really makes his business everyone else's, because he even like bitches to Sisko about the legality.
Right, he claims to have like the exclusive permit to run gambling concessions on the station.
I like that at least Deep Space Nine, and specifically this show, is partly interested in the minutiae of business ownership on the station. I want them to go further. I want to know more about how that happens.
Me too, which is why I wish they would either, you know, stand on the courage of their convictions and show what the minutiae is like, or not bring it up at all.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
No!
Do you want to tell me why?
Because all of the cons are super transparent. Like, I was never surprised by somebody being a con artist. I love a con man movie, and it's everybody knows that it's one of my favorite genres of movie. And it's because it's like, it's always, you're always guessing who is gaming and who is not, you know, who's running a grift on whom. And this episode just cannot get out of its own way in, you know, revealing who is bad from jump. Like it is literally like a Nigerian prince email scam level of transparency.
I mean, I don't think it'll surprise you to know that I'm taking the opposite position.
What? I didn't convince you?
I really like the episode, and I think the reason I like it is because frequently I don't like shows that are sceney instead of plotty. This is one of the episodes that is almost entirely sceney, but the reason that I like the ep is because I like those scenes so much. There's really fun O'Brien in the locker room from Rocky moment, like when he gets ready for that final confrontation with Bashir that I really liked. There's the whole backstory of like Quark railroading Bashir and O'Brien into the match to begin with, because he's giving proceeds to a Bajoran orphanage. There's like an underpinning for why things are happening here that I really appreciated. And I thought the performances were good too. Like, I think anytime you get angry Quark, that's good. Anytime you get sweaty, shirtless O'Brien, that's a good thing. I hope we see more of that. And it was a very good Keiko episode, maybe the best Keiko episode that we've gotten. And so for all those reasons together, I like the episode.
Well, you're wrong, Adam, but do you want to move on to Priority One messages?
That's something that we can both agree on.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is for House Mokai. It is from Laurel, and the message goes like this. Ari, Starfleet infiltration via TGG/TGD. I signify I'm of them, with thumbs up, hearts, laughing, and sad faces. The chat group yielded vast intel, but hard to decipher. I created Jim Shimoda, and now they do jumping jacks, not combat training. They are best of humanity. From this day, I am Kim Zadi. Sold my armor to Funkadelic. Mokai can fuck off. Plavim 2.
The Raz and Plavim wars really died down for a while, and they are back to hot at this point. That is like the most unintelligible thing we've gotten not from the warm honeyed bosom in a while.
Yeah, there's also a hot war between the warm honeyed bosom and those guys, and Team Raz and Team Plavim.
Yeah, and also between the warm honeyed bosom and making sense. And we have a second Priority One message here. It is from Imogen, and it's for Megan. Those are our friends in Australia, right?
Oh, yeah.
It goes like this. To the greatest sister in the galaxy, Kimo is a bitch, but you are rocking it like a superstar, and I'm going to be here shimotivating you for the next 100 years because I love you. Wee-oo, wee-oo, wah! I don't think I realized that Megan was fighting something chemo-related. Is that always cancer?
I think we're lucky to not know for sure.
Yeah.
And, it sucks bad, it sounds like. I hope our dumb show is able to give you comfort.
Yeah. Imogen and Megan have been a fun part of this community from basically the beginning, as far as I can remember. And,
OG viewers of the pod.
Yeah, and we are really glad that treatment is getting got, and like Imogen, we'll be shimotivating you for the next 100 years.
That's right. That's the sentence that you and I have. You won't be able to wiggle out of this like the way you were able to wiggle out of jail.
Yeah, when we signed the contract with Max Flynn, it was a lot like signing up to become a Scientologist.
Except there's no money to be made.
Well, if you would like to send a Priority One message, you can go over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where a personal message is $100 and a commercial message is $200. And they help us pay the lawyers that are helping us try and get out of this crippling contract. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, I think the scene that stuck out to me most was Bashir's sauce snatching in the beginning. Like, I have so many questions about this scene. Like, I feel like the Replimat would be a place that much like Costco does. The Costco food court has the large format condiment area with like the gallon size jug that you take your food to it and you prepare your food there and then you go back to your seating area. I find it strange that the Replimat would have individual bottles on each of the tabletops there.
Yeah.
And so I found Bashir's growing frustration with the empty sauces to be something of a Shimoda for sure. So that to me was great. What about you?
I'm going to give it to Quark. Quark spends much of this episode promoting a big sporting event, which he then televises by having a GoPro up on a wall in a room and he does the play-by-play himself. Like, he has no staff, he has no like camera crew, and when O'Brien and Bashir decide that they don't want any further part of it, they just can go turn the camera off, and Quark has no recourse there. Like, come on, Quark, be a little better.
I think what you have to do is get Hollow Jim Lampley and Hollow Larry Merchant to do the call on this. They have the technology.
Yeah. Get with it.
Gotta get that gold press lap. Get that
gold press lap.
Am I right?
Woo!
Yeah. Am I right?
Woo! Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology. With two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What do we have coming up on the next ep, Ben? An ep that we may or may not be doing a Quark's Bar style, because that square is only two squares away from us.
We are dangerously close to Quark's Bar. Well, the next episode is Season 2, Episode 12, The Alternate. Odo's mentor arrives on Deep Space Nine, intent on resuming his search for Odo's true origin.
And then what does Netflix have to say about that?
Well, Adam, you'll be delighted to learn that as far as Netflix is concerned, the next episode is episode 12. Dr. Maura Pohl arrives on Deep Space Nine with the announcement that he may have a clue to Odo's origins. A rare meeting of the minds between the capsule writers at Amazon and Netflix.
Hmm.
Pretty exciting stuff. This has been Odo's big storyline. This is a myth arc for Odo, looks like.
I'm interested in getting back into this storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do a good job maybe every 8-ish episodes of touching this again.
Yeah.
And I think that's the right rate too. like they're very intentionally slow rolling this.
If the cigarette smoking man is in every episode, it just gets a little tiresome.
That's right.
Okay, Adam, do you want to open up our game board, the Game of Buttholes, the Will of the Prophets, and see what fate has in store for us? Has the laws of probability been altered?
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Right now we are on square number 34.
34.
And I am now going to roll the die. And it is a 1.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
It is a 1. It moves us to square 35. And it is 1 square closer to a Quarks Bar episode.
Wow. Well, I am really glad that we didn't land on 36 because I have a hangover today.
Oh, I couldn't tell.
Oh, that's...
I mean, other than you being irritated and negative throughout the last episode.
I'm a slave to the coin, Adam. The coin told me to do that.
Well, great. I'm looking forward to that episode, Ben.
Well, normal style it shall be. In the meantime, you can let us know which of us carried the day with the most persuasive argument all over the social medias. There's Reddit. There's a Facebook group. There's the Greatest Gen hashtag on Twitter, where Adam is at Cut for Time and I'm at Benjamin R, AHR.
I'm going to say that if Ben's arguments were more persuasive to you, maybe you can use hashtag negative Ben. and if my arguments spoke to you in a deeper way, you could use hashtag positive Adam.
I'm positive that you're an idiot, Adam, and we'll see more of that on next week's episode. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for all of the other music, including most of the theme music now that you hear on the show. And our viewers that go to MaximumFun.org/donate and help produce the show out of the kindness of their own hearts.
More tour dates are coming out by the week. I would say if you're interested in seeing us do this live, and why wouldn't you? It's a glorious shit show of dick jokes and Star Trek and our dumb faces. I would encourage you to go to greatestgencon.com and find out where we're going to be for the rest of the year. More dates being announced all the time, and we look forward to seeing you out on the road.
Yeah.
With that being said, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which could be swapped out for any other episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, probably, without being noticed.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.